Or work is about scrambling, which describes the quantum phenomenon such that the initially localized information gets spread into the entire quantum system, so that by local measurement, we can no longer retrieve this information. And it has the property that the overall evolution and the state of the system will look random in some sense. And this is a process that we'll study in our work. And there are many different ways to probe scrambling. And one of the ways is to use the operator growth, which basically means that some local perturbations acting only on one part of the system will gradually spread to the entire system. For example, like if we have an operator initially acting on this qubit at coordinate zero, then as time goes, its support will grow to a larger and larger set of qubits. And that's what we mean by operator growth. And quantitatively, this can be quantified using the out-of-time order correlator that we will define soon. And another probe is entanglement growth. Scrambling happens because the generation of global multipartite entanglement will hide the information from any local measurement, just as what I have described about the characteristics of the scrambling. And to quantify this entanglement growth, we can use entanglement entropies, for example, von Neumann entropies, or more generalized Rayleigh entropy. Now we define this out-of-time order correlator, or OTOC for short. Suppose we have an operator O1 that acts on qubit X, and the zero means that it's at time zero. And suppose we also have another operator O2, YT, which is a operator in Heisenberg picture at time T. And it initially only acts on qubit Y on time zero. Then the OTOC between them is just defined using this formula. Basically, it means that it is the average of the square of the commutator between O1 and O2. And the average is taken with respect to some thermal state. And for our paper, we study the infinite temperature thermal state. And using basically after an enough amount of time, the evolution unitary of the system will become random enough so that the OTOC and the entanglement entropy will gradually reach its equilibrium value. For OTOC, the equilibrium value is just order one. And for entanglement entropy, between a set of vertices A and its complement A bar, the equilibrium value will be the minimum of the size of A and the size of A bar. Here, we can define the OTOC saturation time and the entanglement saturation time, which means the time needed for OTOC and entanglement to reach a constant times their equilibrium value, respectively. And this OTOC saturation time and entanglement saturation time are defined with respect to a pair of vertices X and Y for TOC, and for a set of vertices A for entanglement. And if we are given a graph, the most interesting saturation times will be the OTOC with the maximum OTOC saturation time with respect to all pairs of vertices, and the maximum of entanglement saturation time with respect to all the sets of vertices. Now we describe our model studied in this paper, which is the random circuit model. Suppose that we have a graph G, which has V vertices and E edges. And on each vertex, we have a D-dimensional qubit. Then the evolution of this system is basically that on average, a hard random two-qubit unitary is acted on the vertices connected by each edge in each unit time. Here the hard randomness is just the uniformly random distribution over all the group. Here it's all the unitaries that can act on two qubits, which is the U D squared group. And here average means that the unitaries are applied according to independent Poisson distributions on each edge. Which means that on each edge, we have a Poisson distribution so that according to this distribution, the unitaries are applied to the vertices connected by this edge. And all the edges are independent. In this way, we can roughly define a dynamics that matches the intuition we have for the more natural Hamiltonian systems, in which basically every Hamiltonian term will give a constant interaction in each unit time. And that's how we define this similar interaction in this random circuit model. So any questions about this model?
So what's the connectivity of the vertices? Can there be many edges?
Yeah, it could be arbitrary graph. Okay.
You also comment on the two different taus. So you define two time scales, one from both UOCs, one from the entanglement.
Yeah.
Will you be connecting them?
Yeah, basically the main work, main contribution in this paper is that we find a separation of these two measures. Okay, let me state the main results in this paper. So consider any pair of vertices at x and y with distance d between them. Then suppose that the degree for each vertex is at most d squared. Then we could show that the OTOC saturation time between x and y will be upper bounded and lower bounded by this d, distance d. So the OTOC saturation time will be linear in the distance between x and y. And for the entanglement side, we have obtained such a lower bound, which is the minimum of the size of A and size of A bar divided by this C AA bar, which means the number of cut edges between A and A bar. Or in other words, the number of edges with one endpoint in A and one endpoint in A bar. So if we apply this bound to this graph with O1, which is a perfect binary tree, and O1 and O2 are just two leaf vertices on different subtrees, and this set A is just one of the subtrees. And in this model, we could show that this OTOC time between these two operators will be logarithm in V. Because basically it's proportional to its distance, and the distance between these two will be just twice the height of the tree, which is the logarithm of the total number of vertices. But for entanglement, we note that the set A and A bar both have the number of vertices that is of the same order of B. But the cut edges, there's only one cut edge. Therefore, this entanglement saturation time will be at least of the order of the number of vertices. And therefore, we have found a separation between these two saturation times. Any questions about this part?
So there is some arbitrariness about the way you've chosen A. You could choose A, for instance, to be only the lowest leaves.
I mentioned in previous slides that for a graph, the most interesting part is to find A such that the saturation time is the largest.
For the entanglement entropy?
Or? Both ODOC and entanglement. We want to find the maximum saturation time. Yeah, which is the most interesting for this graph.
Is it possible that there's some other A for which the two times would be the same? Or?
Yeah, it's totally possible. So I'll first talk about the implications of this work. So the first implication is about scrambling non-Euclidean geometries. So previous work have studied scrambling, or especially OTOC, mostly on the Euclidean lattices. And there they have obtained the assumption that after time t, any localized perturbation will affect everything within a ball of radius, that is t times some butterfly velocity. However, such kind of works are mostly just heuristic arguments, and they include uncontrolled approximations. So for our work, we have shown that at least for this random circuit models, as long as the graph degree is small, then we have proved that this intuition is indeed true. So the intuition is that we have an operator first acting on some vertex, and then after some 1 unit of time, the effect of this operator will propagate to all the vertices, that is distance 1 from this vertex. And then after like 2 units of time, then it will spread to all the vertices with distance 2. So this is the intuition that we about the proof that we got. And the second implication is about black hole information scrambling. So in this paper by Peter Shor, he showed that if the geometry near a Schwarzschild black hole divides the geometry near a Schwarzschild black hole into Planck size blocks. And if you assume that the Hawking radiation is the only kind of interaction in this geometry, he has shown that the entanglement generation time will be very large compared to the log n given by the fast scrambling conjecture. And if we apply our model to this geometry, we could also show that this entanglement saturation time in this model, in this geometry, will be very large. So our work can be viewed as a more rigorous argument for Peter's paper. And another implication is that the OTOC saturation is needed for the Yoshida-Kitaev protocol used for hidden Prisco decoding task. So that given some geometry or work can be used to get the time needed for this protocol to be successful. And the third implication is about constructing two designs. This is has more implications in quantum information society. A two design is a distribution over the unitaries that could approximately agree with Haar measure up to the first two moments. This is two designs are very important in quantum information society, and there has been some previous work to show how to construct it efficiently. And since this two design approximates the Haar measure up to the first two levels, having a two design implies that OTOC and entanglement will both be saturated. And our work shows that if you want two design on a general graph, then the time needed might be much larger than the diameter, which is a conjecture in the previous paper. So we have shown that since entanglement saturation could take the time much larger than the diameter of the graph, we have shown that the two designs may not be constructed in this diameter time, in time proportional to the diameter. Any questions? Then let me proceed to the techniques of our proof. So the first step is to convert this model into a Markov chain. We have a continuous Poisson distribution model, which is somehow quite messy to deal with. So we first convert it into a discrete model. First notice that according to the properties of the Poisson distribution, after time t, there will be e times t edges that are picked with high probability, where e is the total number of edges. That's because every edge has on average, each edge will be picked once in one unit of time. So after t unit of time in total, there will be e times t edges, or in other words, unitaries that has been picked. And also, if you consider all the edges, they're just distributed according to independent Poisson distributions. And therefore, each edge is picked uniformly random among all the edges. I mean, the order of the edges are just completely random. Using this tool, we could say that our Poisson distributed model is equivalent to picking a random edge in every 1 over e unit of time up to a constant factor with high probability. And therefore, we have first convert this continuous model into a discrete model. And from now on, we call this process of picking one edge and apply a unitary. We call it one step. And the time needed will be just the number of steps divided by e. And now we can deal with this discrete model. E is the total number of edges. Yeah. So in the Heisenberg picture, we could expand this Heisenberg operator into the basis of all the Pauli operators using this way. And we could notice that after each step, this expectation value of this coefficient, or this cross term of the coefficient, will transform in a linear way. And also, since each step is hard random for the two qubits, with a little bit of computation, we can see that this average is zero for any q not equal to q prime. And in this way, we only need to study this quantity, alpha q star, the expectation of this thing. And note that this all of this coefficient will sum to one. And therefore, we can think of it as a probability distribution. And since each step is linear in this thing, we can think of this process as a Markov chain defined over all the Pauli operators. The next step is to note that on each vertex, the non-identity Pauli operators will have the same probability. Therefore, we can further simplify this state space of this Markov chain. Previously, it's all the Pauli operators, which has d squared to the power of n states or operators. But since all the non-identity operators are equivalent, we only need to care about this 2 to the n states, where each vertex is either non-identity Pauli operator or identity. Or we could also say that it's a label n or I. And the transformation follows this kind of rule. So if you pick an edge and on its two of its vertices, or we have both identities, then nothing happens. Otherwise, if at least one of the vertex has a non-identity Pauli operator, then it will transform according to this rule, which has 1 over d squared probability of having one identity and one non-identity, and the same probability for the other way around. And otherwise, both of the vertices will be non-identity. And to study OTOC with O1 acting on x and O2 acting on y at time t, the Markov chain, the initial state of the Markov chain will have a single non-identity operator on vertex y. And at some time t, after some number of steps, the OTOC at that time will be proportional to the probability of having a non-identity operator, Pauli operator on vertex x. So that's how we convert the entire model into a Markov chain. So now we will prove an upper bound of the OTOC saturation time using this Markov chain model. The statement of this upper bound is that suppose Z, which is the maximum degree of vertices in the graph, if it is at most d squared, then the OTOC time between x and y will be at most a constant times the distance with high probability. Prove this, we first show that a non-identity Pauli operator will propagate to vertex x in e times the number of steps. Note that we are talking about steps here. So if you convert it back to the Poisson model, it will just be the time d. And to show this, we could use we can consider a modified Markov chain, which only keeps one non-identity operator that is on the vertex that is closest to vertex x, and all the other non-identities will just be set to be identity. In this way, we have a less number of non-identities, and therefore it could give an upper bound for the original Markov chain. This is a worse Markov chain, so it could give an upper bound for the original one. And for each step, suppose that currently this non-identity operator is here, and it wants to reach the vertex x here, and there is at least one vertex, one neighbor of this vertex that is closer to this vertex x. So with 1 over e probability, we can choose this edge. And with probability d squared over d squared plus 1, the non-identity operator will propagate to this neighbor. Therefore, we have at least this probability that the non-identity Pauli operator will become one step closer to the vertex x. And on the other hand, there will be at most z minus 1 neighbors of this vertex that are one step farther from x. So there will be z minus 1 over e chance that we pick such an edge, and with probably 1 over d squared plus 1, we will have the non-identity operator will get to this neighbors while leaving an identity 0. And as a result, we have this probability of z minus 1 divided by e times d squared plus 1 of this distance increased by 1. And otherwise, the distance just does not change. Therefore, if we have z smaller or equal to d squared, the distance will tend to decrease in each step. And therefore, we could prove that using this number of steps, this distance will decrease to 1, decrease to 0, which means that the non-identity Pauli operator will propagate to vertex x. And after this Pauli operator that has been propagated to this vertex x, we could also show that it has a constant probability of staying there, because we could still study the similar operator that only keeps the non-identity operator that is closest to x. And we, again, using the similar analysis, we could show that the probability of this non-identity being on this vertex will be lower bounded by a constant. Therefore, as long as the non-identity operator propagate to vertex x, there will be a constant probability that OTOC will be a constant. And therefore, the bound we got will just be the upper bound for the OTOC time.
I'm sorry, I could go back to the previous slide.
Yeah.
So if z is large, what would happen?
Basically, there is a trade-off between the increase of this distance and decrease of this distance. So if z is large, then there will be a higher probability that you pick an edge between this current vertex and the neighbor that's farther from the vertex x. So if z is too large, there will be a high chance that you pick a farther neighbor.
I see. So then if I construct like 1D chain with lots of...
Yeah, if you have 1D chain, then z just equal to 2.
And then z, yeah, 1D chain, and if I decorate each qubit with lots of this.
Yeah. Yeah, in that case, actually, I'm just saying that this is kind of depends on our technique of proof. So that if the degree is a little bit higher than this d squared, then we just cannot prove it. But it could still like saturate. But on the other hand, if the degree is too large, actually, we have some intuition that it will take a much longer than the linear time for the OTOC to saturate. Yeah, I will mention that later, near the end of the talk. Any other questions about this upper bound? Okay, and then I proceed to the lower bound. Again, if the z is the maximum degree in the graph, we have shown that suppose z is upper bounded by a constant, then the OTOC time between x and y will be at least proportional to the distance between x and y. Know that this bound works as long as the degree is constant. But if the constant is too large, then the degree the bound becomes weaker, because we have suppressed a constant in this OTOC time. And if the degree is too large, then the constant will become small. So the bound becomes weaker. But see, it is always a linear bound.
Sorry, I heard that proving the lower bound is something trivial.
Yeah, that's true. It's I think it's easier.
Is it just exactly the distance, or what?
But like in our model, we have a Poisson model, right?
Oh, I see. Okay, that's the reason why you have probability.
Yeah, it's very like there is a very small chance that could be a smaller than linear time. So the lower bound is proved using a union bound in the probability theory. So basically, consider a path starting from vertex Y with this with a length d. Then for any constant lambda smaller than one, the probability for a non-identity operator to propagate through this path with lambda d times e steps will be exponentially small in d, according to the Chernoff bound in probability theory. And therefore, and also for any integer d, there will be at most z minus 1 to the power of d paths starting from vertex y. Using union bound, the total probability will be upper bounded by this z minus 1 to the power of d times this exponentially small probability. However, if we choose this lambda to be a small enough constant, then this exponent will be very negative, and it will, and in the end, it will just overwhelm this positive exponent. And in the end, we get an exponentially small probability that the OTOC is small, smaller than linear. Or in other words, we have a high probability that is lower bounded by a linear time. Any questions about this part? Okay, then for entanglement, it's actually a very interesting proof. So again, we have the statement of the theorem, which says that the entanglement saturation time is lower bounded by minimum of the size of A and size of A bar divided by the number of cut edges. And the theorem becomes clear once we prove this lemma, which says that suppose we have a unitary operator acting on two d-dimensional systems AB, and suppose we have a pure state psi in AA prime BB prime. Then we apply this UAB on this psi, but only on this A and B part. Then the entanglement between AA prime and BB prime will increase by at most 2 times log d. The proof is that suppose we have Alice holding A and A prime and Bob holding B and B prime. And suppose they also share two pairs of EPR pairs. Then consider the following protocol such that Alice teleports the register A to Bob. Then Bob apply this unitary locally and finally teleport this A back to Alice. This is a LOCC protocol, local operation and classical communications. And under such protocol, the entanglement cannot increase. And therefore, we can see that the entanglement of this state cannot increase by 2 log d. And using this lemma, we can see that the maximum equilibrium, the equilibrium value of the entanglement will be the minimum of size of A and size of A bar times log d. But only when we pick the cut edge, the entanglement can increase by 2 log d at most. So we use this, divide this maximum entropy by the number of cut edges, and we will get the lower bound for the entanglement saturation time. Okay, finally, I will talk about some alternative models, which are different from the model we considered, but they also have interesting properties. The first kind of examples are just to pick the edges in some different orders. Because one might argue that the slow entanglement saturation in our previous model was depend on the low chance of picking the cut edge in the binary tree. So we consider an alternative model, which just picks one edge from one side of the cut edge, and then pick the cut edge itself, and finally pick an edge from the other side. In this way, the cut edge will be picked like one over one third of the times. But even it has this, such a high chance for picking this cut edge, we could still show that there is a separation in this between the OTOC time and entanglement time in this model. The reason is that the unitary acting on the cut edge is very likely to not to share any vertex with other unitaries. Because if you pick a unitary on one side of the tree, it's very likely that it doesn't share the vertex with the cut edge. And in this way, the unitaries on the cut edge will be commuted through the other unitaries. And in this way, all these unitaries on the cut edges can be clubbed together. So our previous analysis could still work. In this way, still like an order of V unitaries, an order that's proportional to the number of vertices is still needed in this model. And therefore, there's still a separation between the OTOC time and the entanglement time in this, even if we change the order of picking the edges. Another kind of variant is to consider different graph, different interaction geometries. So instead of binary trees, we could also consider like two complete graphs that has been connected by a cut edge. And even though in this graph, the degree is high so that our OTOC bound is no longer true, but still we can show that there's a separation between OTOC time and entanglement time, both in terms of the previous Poisson model and the model with high chance of picking the cut edge. And one advantage of this geometry is that it allows a third way of choosing the edges, which is to choose a random perfect matching on the complete graphs, and then followed by applying the unitary on the cut edge. But in this way, still we can show that there is a separation. And finally, the most interesting variant of the models is some high degree graphs. So in high degree graphs, the OTOC time can actually significantly deviate from the linear bound we have obtained. So one example is a star graph given in that paper. So star graph is just one vertex connected with every other vertices. And this graph has constant diameter, but the OTOC time is log n. And another example, it's just we consider a perfect tree again, but it has many, its degree is much higher than d squared. So intuitively, when the non-identity matrix reaches a vertex, it will have a very high chance that it will propagate to the one of its child nodes, child vertex, without propagating upward. Therefore, the OTOC time between a leaf in this tree and the root will be much higher than the linear time, the distance between them. And the previous two examples just shows that the OTOC time can be significantly larger than the distance. But we could also find some examples in which the OTOC time is much shorter than the distance. One example is a complete graph. So it has been shown that the OTOC saturation time is log n over n. But in this graph, the diameter is constant. And another example is that if we replace each edge by a k-fold parallel edges, so the process will just be accelerated by a factor of k. Well, but maybe this parallel edges sounds like cheating, but we could alternatively change an edge uv into this structure by just putting in some additional vertices, and they're all connected this way. Still, this will be a order k acceleration of the original geometry. So basically, I'm saying that if you allow arbitrarily high degree in the graph, then by doing this kind of changing the graph in this way, you could arbitrarily shrink the OTOC time. So this is another example that the OTOC time could be much shorter than the diameter, much shorter than the distance of the vertices. So in summary, we have proved a linear upper and lower bound for OTOC saturation time in this random circuit model on general graph, as long as the degree of the vertices are small enough. And if we combine this result with the lower bound for entanglement, then we could show that there is a separation between the OTOC time and entanglement time. And that's it. Thanks for your attention.
I put in Peter's previous paper, he considered this partitioning of the radiation zone, and he argued this separation. And what would be the graph that corresponds to that situation?
You mean this one?
Yeah. Yes, I need to connect all cells, but is it? Should I apply unitary set at the same time scales or different?
When constructing that graph, he has already like taken the time dilation into consideration.
So each cell process information, the unit.
So this graph will look like the hyperbolic geometry, the tessellation of hyperbolic geometry. Yeah, because on each level, in some sense, it will have exponentially more number of vertices, so it corresponds to a hyperbolic geometry.
So for this geometry, what was the Otak time?
It's basically linearing the like the height in some sense, which is logarithmic in the number of vertices.
Why was it?
Because in this hyperbolic graph, in each level, you have like n exponentially number of vertices in each level, but basically the OTOC time will just be the number of levels in this graph.
If I start from one of the cell and then from beacon, and then yes, we are talking about the time scale we are describing about the whole system.
This is kind of reversed because for like when you go farther from the black hole, you have a smaller number of cells. So this is actually an inverse version of the hyperbolic graph, where this out cycle is the most inner in the hyperbolic.
Okay. So it's which way you need to go from the boundary and the inside and propagate.
The farthest point in this graph is actually from one of the cell near the event horizon, and it propagates outwards until it's outside enough so that there is a constant number of cells in that level, and then it reaches to the other side and go back to the event horizon.
Can I ask one more question? So do you have any lower bound or upper bound design time?
For two design time? There was only previous work on Euclidean geometry and complete graphs. But I don't know.
In terms of time, that's lower.
Anything else known? Or
no, but OTOC is lower.
Yeah, but my feeling is OTOC time, entanglement time, and so design time.
The entanglement time is probably a rather strong measure of design time.
same order.
It really depends on your measure of approximate to stretch, but usually entanglement or decoupling is a strong enough measure. But here, one information is that the OTOC measure might not be very strong, right? Because it can saturate pretty fast. All right, then let's take this.